Hello, everyone. Thanks for giving us your time today. I'm Ian Hamilton in New York, joined by David Heaney from London, broadcasting this episode of VR Download today. It is March 12th, 2024, and I'm wearing a Quest 3. We're live on YouTube with audience interaction and on replay across every podcast platform. We're here to talk about the rise of virtual reality, and you can support our work directly on uploadvr.com with membership. David, what do we have today?
Hello again, everyone. Today, we're going to first talk about Meta explaining the one-hour quest outage that happened last Tuesday and their vow to make the headsets more resilient to issues like them. We'll talk about Quest V63 update. Not a huge update, but it did add a lying down mode on Quest 2 and Quest Pro. We'll then talk about something that Meta has now said about the V62 update. We talked about before in this show how it had AirLink improvements, and Meta is making some very specific claims about how it extended AirLink session battery length by more than 50%, which is pretty remarkable. We'll talk about VisionOS 1.1 launching, the operating system for Apple Vision Pro getting its first significant software update. We will talk about Rick and Morty virtual reality facing delisting by Warner Bros. So that could be a pretty significant game in the history of VR, just getting taken off the PlayStation and Steam stores. We'll talk about TCL launching the crowdfunding campaign for Ray Neo X2, the first standalone AR glasses. We talked about that before on this show, maybe 4 to 6 episodes ago, but they have now actually launched that crowdfunding campaign so you can order or crowdfund, which is a very different thing, as we'll discuss the first standalone AR glasses. And finally, we'll talk about Pico 4S. So it looks like a successor, or really just an upgrade to Pico 4, is coming, and it will be called Pico 4S because ByteDance has trademarked that, and references to Pico 4S controllers were found in the Pico software.
Hello, everyone. In our comments, I'm seeing a lot of people across the United States, Denver, Texas, Massachusetts. I think I saw Buffalo, New York, a lot of people from all over the world watching us today. If you're in the United States, hope you're staying warm because it's still pretty cold as things are warming up for spring. And thank you to all of our regular viewers who come in week in and week out. We actually started on time today, which was kind of cool. And yeah, I saw people asking about our Apple Vision Pro avatar show that we tried to do a couple weeks ago, and very problematic, a lot of bugs on multiple fronts. I'm pretty convinced that I think it's really useful to use the personas and show the environment around you, but I doubt we're going to do it with VR Download anytime soon, right?
Yeah, I think Ian and I pretty strongly disagree on this one. We agreed on most of our assessment when it came to Apple Vision Pro in our review. You can go back a few episodes and see that. The one thing we really disagreed on was personas. You know, because right now they are just a 2D flat webcam view, to me, it's just a worse webcam. And yes, it's very cool that you can go into first person, as you say, and screen share what you're seeing. But I think that has sort of limited use cases beyond the initial novelty. And you could also reproduce that with a USB camera, or just using the rear camera on your phone. You know, that's something people can already do pretty often. But I agree with you. That's an interesting use case. I just don't think it makes up for all the disadvantages of using personas right now.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very different thing. I'll try to prove this out on some point with our audience to try to see sort of what's useful, because you're absolutely right. But also having hanging screens and augmented content that you can pull up at any moment is something you can't do with the other modes. But we'll have to get to that when we get to it. And yeah, we're sorry to everyone who sort of wanted to see the bugs in that episode, because they were like a little mark in history. But we didn't think the bugs were like a good... I don't feel like the bugs were representative of the technology more than trying to use them in a really rough broadcasting scenario. And that's what we're going to try to come back on it later. Any comments you want to respond to before we get into this, David?
Yeah, we just have Jay Ritchie supporting my view here, saying I personally like the virtual studio more. And I'm sure we'll have different commenters with different views. Some will side with you and some will side with me on this. And I'm sure everyone will have an opinion on this.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. When I prove it out, when I do my demonstration of how to use that kind of streaming, I think it'll, when it comes across right, I think it'll make sense as something wholly different than what we do in the studio. So yes, I love the studio. I love this conversation. And I'm even noticing in our comments, there's a lot of people that have really been on this journey for multiple years with us and have seen the different avatars we've used, have seen the slow, steady of progress getting there. I love this studio. You know, I love this studio. So I absolutely don't think it's going to replace it anytime soon. It's just, I think it's going to be a very different sort of thing. You want to get into the first subject here?
Yeah, I guess the last thing on that I just want to say is that I'm really looking forward to spatial personas. As I just mentioned, the current personas are just a 2D flat window. You see them like you would a webcam view when you're in Vision Pro. It's just a 2D window with a 2D rendering of a person's face. But Apple is working on spatial personas, which are somewhat like avatars we have now, three-dimensional characters that can exist within a shared virtual coordinate space so that we could, you know, maybe have a experience like this where, you know, we have a shared monitor that we can both see and point to the same content. And over here we see, you know, a preview of what the audience is seeing and a count of how many people are watching. And in front of us, we could have a, you know, a tablet that allows us to cast something to the audience and easily view the comments, that sort of thing. Very, very excited personally for spatial personas. That could very much so change my mind about the best way to broadcast.
Yep, definitely. I think we're going to get there, right? We've known, just to be clear there, right? Like, that's been clearly on Apple's sort of roadmap. They even announced those personas last year. And there's a lot of people out there sort of waiting for them to launch. And I think even games, right? Until games can have that shared coordinate space where all the avatars are gathered around a single bit of content, there's a major piece missing from Apple's entire gaming strategy.
Absolutely. I think that is the number one. We'll talk about this when we talk about VisionOS 1.1, I guess, but I think it's the number one thing that's missing from Vision Pro and the number one most anticipated feature. Apple only mentioned the spatial personas feature back at WWDC, when the same day that they announced Vision Pro, the same day the Vision Pro went from a hypothetical and a rumor to real, they talked about these spatial personas. They haven't said anything since. At the time, they said it was actually going to be a developer preview by the end of 2023. That didn't happen. It hasn't materialized. I imagine we'll hear about them in June at WWDC.
I like Bob Whitmer's comment here saying, oh no, you'll be able to see my bald spot. It's a funny comment because I do wonder how they'll scan that part of your head, because it doesn't really do a huge, like, you don't raise the system up to cover that part of your head and you don't go too far behind. So I'm curious if the process changes in order to accommodate capturing the rest of your face.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Vision OS is only launched, and as we'll talk about soon, I'm sure it has a long history ahead of it. But let's talk about our first news piece here, the outage. So, you know, we talked about it last week on the show. We had our own ideas behind what happened. And if you weren't there, if you missed last week in VR news, on Tuesday last week, Quest headsets that were connected to the internet stopped working for 1 hour. If your headset was offline, nothing bad happened. If your headset was online, your headset would show a something went wrong screen for a whole hour where it was unusable. And so after the show, Meta's VP of VR, Mark Rabkin, explained what happened and had a kind of vow to make it not happen again. So as I said last week, what didn't happen here is Meta's servers go down, therefore Quest doesn't work. Quest headsets don't require an internet connection and don't require a connection to Meta servers. Mm-hmm. What they do require is a signed in Meta account. And so according to Mark Rabkin, the VP of VR at Meta, in this instance, our login servers had a bug and were returning responses the headset didn't expect, which made the sessions invalid. We'll work to make it more resilient to this super rare condition. And this was actually in response to one of my tweets about this. So we also got a response to one of my tweets from Andrew Bosworth, the CTO of Meta. And the analogy that I made to this, based on our understanding of the issue before Meta had actually explained it, was it was as if you've gone into your Quest headset's account settings and clicked sign out. So the headset signs you out and goes back to let someone else use it. And so this kind of ability to invalidate a login session does have its uses. For example, say someone stole your Quest, or you leave it on a train and it's gone forever, or, you know, you left it in the hotel room and you go to change your Meta password because you don't want them to access your headset and go into your browser and et cetera, et cetera. You would want the login session for that Quest to expire and the headset to sign out if you've changed your password because you no longer have the device. That's the instance where that something like this should happen. The problem is that this happened through a technical issue. The Meta servers thought that everyone or sent the wrong kind of information to the headset that made the headset think that the login session was no longer valid. And so obviously that's extremely frustrating for people when it doesn't work. And Meta has vowed, Mark Rabkin has vowed to make the headsets more resilient so that this kind of thing doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I'm going to call out Onikaze's comment here. The YouTube community reaction was as predictable as it was wrong. And I'm going to take this moment to credit David Heaney for his incredible work throughout that entire outage. Our tweet on the matter was very viral amongst MetaQuest users, I think, who were desperate to know what was going on. And you know, Meta had its own sort of response system in place. Like they were trying to respond to people as this was going down. But, you know, David had an article up. We had an article up while the outage was still underway with a correct explanation of the outage for everyone that needed to do it. And then we had comments from two of the leading people in charge of the VR department at Meta, basically confirming our accuracy in real time. And then we had a follow-up going into this. This is a big deal and a big day. An hour-long outage is a significant thing to have happen to your headset. And it is a, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is a week into saying this is the better product, period, right? And then this happens for an hour. And it's a shameful sort of thing for the entire team to log all of their users out for an hour. But it's not the same as the 8-hour outage that happened a couple of years ago in Rift with the security issue there.
Yeah, you're right to say that this was embarrassing for Meta. It's downright embarrassing to have something like this happen. When it comes to the accuracy problem, I think you and Onikaze are correct that some people immediately assumed that this was because Quest headsets work offline. And it's a great story, isn't it? This idea, oh, your Quest has to always call back to evil Meta's servers. And if it doesn't at any time, it'll stop working and brick itself. It's a great story for clicks, but it's not true. And some of the people who started with that assumption didn't actually bother to check, is this story true? And so obviously it wasn't. But yeah, as you say, it's just after Mark Zuckerberg is kind of praising this as the best headset, the better product overall than Vision Pro, something like this happening is deeply embarrassing for Meta. I did look into kind of the past of Apple to see if there's anything remotely related. And it turns out there wasn't a very obscure issue with Macs where one of the security checks that's used to run on some new applications is server-side. And there was, I think, an hour or two in the past that check went down. And so people weren't able to launch certain apps on their Mac. There are always going to be these extremely rare edge cases where things like this happen. What's important is for these companies to make sure that these headsets and these devices are resilient so that if there is something wrong on the server, even unintentionally, there needs to be a fallback for the user. But you know, every service you use goes down eventually, but you should always have a way to continue to use a device regardless of what's happening on the server side.
Yep. Our comments covering sort of the gamut here of reaction. Jay Ritchie saying, as someone that's responsible for this sort of work, it is always so painful having to spend time fixing the extremely unlikely events. But yeah, that's the job. And it's very, very descriptive of an entire profession of keeping the servers running. And then this other one, Phoby, that was just a small reminder that your hardware gets useless if someone wants to. I think that's deeply meaningful comment. You think of things like the obsolescence or the planned obsolescence of hardware. Apple had to, I think, spend a very significant amount of money for throttling, maybe I could be wrong. They had so many class action lawsuits, I could be mixing them up. But there was a situation of throttling older devices because the batteries couldn't take you as long as you needed to, because the batteries have run down from too many run-throughs. What they did was they throttled down the processor in order to use the battery less, right? So you get the same or similar battery life, but you started noticing your device slowing down. this would be an extreme version of that, right? Like I would take a slowed down device. I don't know if I would in VR, but on a phone situation over a device that has less battery power. If you're trying to weigh the two things, I would guess having the device last longer is better than no device at all. But like this is a completely different scenario. And to that point, right, like these companies can do a lot of things to push you off of the device at any time they really want to. And that's something we have to keep in mind.
Yeah, that is very much so correct. On devices that consumer electronics devices that receive over-the-air updates, the companies can change whatever they like, essentially. And they can, as the commenter said, they can lock you out of your device. I mean, the mechanism exists on pretty much all modern portable consumer electronics devices for this. If you think about it, there are very good reasons for it. For example, if your iPhone is stolen, you mark it as stolen on the iCloud website or on one of your other Apple devices, and boom, Apple remotely bricks your iPhone. Now, is that a bad thing in that case? No, it's a great thing because the thief no longer has any way to have any functional use of your device. But from a philosophical perspective, it is true to say that Apple has just remotely bricked your phone. The only difference is in that case is with your consent, but that means that the technical capacity exists to do it without your consent at any time.
Yeah, the flip side of that, right? There's the videos of the thieves going through the Apple Store and grabbing 15 devices, 30 devices, and the Apple Store employees just stand there and watch the entire scenario. They're actually, as my understanding is, they're trained to just back up and let that happen, because as soon as those devices walk out the door, they're getting bricked pretty quickly because of this remote scenario. And I'm seeing a couple interesting comments here. One person taking this opportunity to praise Android. I think David is doing a really good job here of explaining the different trade-offs to consider here. I've lost, I'll throw this out there, that I've lost two pairs of the Meta Ray-Ban glasses over the course of having them, ones I've bought for myself. I know, right? You say what? Go ahead and insult me about my lack of care for devices. Every Apple device has Find My on it. Not a single
You've Meta device. You've lost two pairs of $300 glasses.
They don't have Find My.
But they're really big. They're like the size of your head. They're glasses.
I wear them on my head. I don't wear sunglasses. It's a new accessory on my body walking around a new place. I forget them. And they don't have Find My. Like there's no where did my glasses go? Whatever. All right. Go ahead and insult me for my lack of care for devices. I went and bought three pairs for myself. I've lost track at this point in order to replace the ones I've lost that I feel bad about. But it's got to have Find My, right? Like what I'm pointing out here is Meta is catching up in many, many ways, in a lot of really like ways we don't even, like Google has Find My, right? Like they have their own version of Find Your Devices over on Google, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you have that on Android these days. You have all that same kind of functionality, including for accessories like Pixel Buds and Pixel Watch and other things like that. And I'm pretty sure Samsung devices have that too.
Headset historian, the what from David was the biggest reaction I've ever heard from him. Yes, that is right. He's absolutely embarrassed by the way I take care of my technology. So
I wouldn't even say take care. It's just like they cost $300 each. It's just
yes, and they should absolutely have Find My on those devices to stop you happening. Should, so all of my photos are
you're
stopped.
Carrying like, a hand-sized thing that's worth $300. You shouldn't lose it.
It's a pair of glasses that aren't strapped to my body like the watches. I've lost AirPods too. Who's lost AirPods out there? You've lost, like, people lose AirPods. This happens.
Okay, AirPods are tiny. Okay, we'll have to move
fine,
forward.
Fine. All right, we get David Heaney going when I lack of care of my device. It's fair. Yeah, lack of care of my devices.
Yeah, let's talk about the next subject.
Headset historian. Headset historian compliment here. Where is it? Because we're going to get to it later. Pico has a booth at GDC, so does it seem likely we will finally see a US launch? I think we'll cover that question when we get to the Pico news later, but it's a very interesting comment to bring up.
That'll be our last topic for today. We'll talk about we'll take all your Pico questions at the end, to put it that way. But let's talk about the next piece of Meta news. We're starting with Meta, and then we'll be talking about Apple, and then the AR glasses, and then Pico. So this is a really strange one. So V62, the Quest update. Remember, today we're talking about V63, which just launched. V62 launched a month ago, And at the time, we discussed on this show how there were improvements to AirLink, AirLink being the built-in feature of Quest headsets that act like a wireless PC VR headset. So Meta's built-in equivalent to Virtual Desktop and Steam Link. We talked about how that V62 update brought support for 120 Hz refresh rate on Quest 3, official support for NVIDIA 4000 series graphics cards, a new auto reconnect feature, and how Meta renamed the PC side software from Oculus to Meta Quest Link. At the time, we also, as a sort of footnote, said Meta is also promising performance, reliability, and battery life improvements from some fundamental code improvements, so including bug fixes. So flash forward a month, and then Meta releases a blog post detailing exactly how significant these battery life changes were. They didn't note this in the log, but a month later, they're making this remarkable claim. They're claiming that they reduced the power consumption by 30% of AirLink, which increased sessions, according to Meta, from 1 hour 30 minutes to 2 hour 20 minutes. And so that's with the headset's built-in battery. So you start with a headset with 100% battery, you launch AirLink to play some wireless PC VR, and they're saying in V61 and before, you would last for an hour and 30 minutes until the headset died. And now, after V62, it will last for 2 hours and 20 minutes. And that is a more than 50% improvement. This would be a lot bigger news in the era before Steam Link and Virtual Desktop, obviously, when AirLink was the only free alternative. Now you have Steam Link that's free as well. And if you want to pay the $20, you have Virtual Desktop, which I still find works better and looks better, Virtual Desktop overall. It is kind of the pro option there, but still pretty remarkable that they've been able to do that. That's a remarkable increase in battery life. They must have made some significant optimizations.
Yeah, very big one there. The battery percentage is shocking, the conversion of that. And there's people out there in the comments that are constantly frustrated by the rate of updates to the Meta ecosystem. And from the VPs on down over there with Meta, they've been pretty pretty consistent in that it takes time for them to roll out the things that people want into the system. So this is an example probably of something that has been in the works for a very long time, and it just now is the time for them to get all their ducks in a row to roll it out. And I think there's a lot of things like that that people can probably look forward to in the next couple months.
Yeah, what I really want time to test, and this brings up a comment from Little Scampi who just says, how does that compare to Steam Link and Virtual Desktop? I really want to make time to test this. That's obviously requires dedicating quite a lot of time, because you're talking about, you know, using these headsets for more than 2 hours each to compare. You're talking about like an entire day or multiple days dedicated to this one question. I may try and see if I can get a friend to try it out. If anyone in our comments wants to do it, we would really appreciate that as a test. If you are the kind of person who has the time on your hands and would love to figure out the answer to this, please launch AirLink and play for as long as your headset dies and time it. Launch Steam Link and play for as long as it takes for your headset to die and time it, and do the same with Virtual Desktop. I would love to see which of these options gives you the longest battery life.
Still cracking up at a lot of the reactions who were in line with you, David. All right, I think we're ready to move on to the next subject here in a minute, but I got to call out Lano's comment here. If these glasses are so smart, why do they keep getting lost? Yeah, all right, that's inside my head. So thank you for going inside my stupid brain and calling out my stupid thoughts. So I thank you for that. Let's move on, David.
Yeah, so we are now going to talk about Vision OS 1.1, Vision OS being the operating system for Vision Pro, and the significant updates here. The biggest one by far is Personas. So when we did try with Personas on this show a few weeks ago, one of the biggest things we noticed was the dramatic quality difference between my Persona and Ian's. Ian's Persona was on Vision OS 1.1 beta, and mine was on 1.0. And so they've really made some dramatic improvements to the realism, the capture process quality, and the rendering quality of Personas. There is a noticeable difference between 1.0 and 1.1, addressing some of the major complaints that some people's Personas were nightmare fuel. Now, some people's look, you know, relatively good. For other people, it was really nightmare fuel. So it's great to see those persona improvements. As well as that, there are some more minor improvements across VisionOS 1.1. They've improved the discovery and connection reliability of Mac Virtual Display, which lets you, you know, cast your Mac display from that little 13-inch or 14-inch or 16-inch laptop display into a giant monitor. And I think Ian mentioned he finds that to be much improved with his Intel Mac.
Yeah, I'm using an Intel Mac right now, and it is much improved. It was almost, I would argue it was unusable on VisionOS 1.0. There was too much lag, even moving the mouse cursor across the screen on an Intel Mac. And then on 1.1, it's very usable, except if I go and open the Safari web browser and start moving the mouse cursor over the Safari web browser in streaming, then it chugs along just like it did prior.
Yeah, so the other improvements in VisionOS 1.1 include that volumes, so three-dimensional apps that run in the shared space, can now be brought closer to you than before. I find this to be a really big issue with the launch software. Sometimes if you're playing like virtual chess or something, you want to just bring the board a little bit closer to you, and there was always just this like very large minimum distance. It's great that Apple so quickly fixed that. We also see that you can now uninstall most of the pre-installed Apple apps. So if you don't have any use for them, they're not just cluttering up your home space, because VisionOS does not let you customize your app launcher, right? You cannot rearrange them. You can't place them where you want. You can't make your own folders, as far as I'm aware. You just have an alphabetical A to Z list of your installed apps, as well as a compatible apps folder that has all of your iPad and iPhone apps. So that's great. That compatible apps folder now gets a notification dot, so you can see when you have notifications in those apps. Apple says they've improved the cursor positioning for text input. That's something I criticized in my review, that with the eye tracking and pinching, it was very hard to precisely select text. There would always be, it feel as if the eye tracking just wasn't accurate enough. Potentially that was a software issue. Now, the Vision Pro that I was using is currently with my colleague Henry, who's doing a review of games on Vision Pro. So I haven't been able to test out 1.1, but I'm very eager when I get the headset back to see if that text selection issue is fixed. Because that sounds like a small note in a change note, but that's huge when you're working with text, such as writing and editing an article. The other improvements are that mobile device management is now supported. So enterprises can now do remote and mass configuration, deployment, and management for Vision Pros. That should make it a lot easier for businesses to use Vision Pro. And finally, Wi-Fi networks with captive portals, such as, you know, those in hotels and cafes and airports, you know, the ones you have to sign in or accept their conditions, they're now officially supported. When I was traveling with Vision Pro, I found that some of them already worked and some of them didn't. So it's great to see official full support for that.
Little Scampi's comment here. Let's hope the one feature Meta steals from VisionOS is us being able to delete apps from our library. Yeah, that is a very useful feature. And I think that got added in 1.1, right? Is the ability to remove some of the apps from that home screen?
Yeah, that's what I said there. You can uninstall most of the Apple pre-installed apps now. To be clear, you can uninstall apps on Quest. The issue is that if you filter your library by uninstalled, you're going to see every app you've ever downloaded. So if you just downloaded like a random demo on Quest or something 3 years ago you don't want to see anymore, you can't remove it from your library. So it is very annoying on Quest. I completely agree with you, Little Scampi. They should absolutely have a, you know, press the hamburger menu and remove from library option on Quest. If anyone from Meta is listening to this podcast, please make that happen. It's such a simple feature that power users would really appreciate, so they can easily manage their content.
It's interesting. Is that a hidden? Should that be hidden or should it be removed? Because I'm thinking of the equivalent feature over on. I think I accidentally purchased a movie I was embarrassed to purchase over on the Apple Store, and you guys can all debate what that movie is, because I'm not gonna share the title. But I think there's a way to hide the title from the Apple library so it no longer comes up, and that's basically what you're asking for apps, right?
To be able to hide it from your list of uninstalls. Things like everything you've redeemed.
Yeah, so I think it's hide, right? Because you're not removing your access to the game. You're just removing it from the list, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's on Steam. They refer to it as remove from library. On Steam, you can remove something that is uninstalled, so it doesn't show up in your list of uninstalled. The naming doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, if you hide it, you have to have somewhere else to find it again. I guess you can make a hidden category. The implementation doesn't matter as long as it's possible.
Yeah, it wasn't Twilight. Little Scampy guessing on Twilight. We ready to move on to the next subject?
Yeah, only, I guess, to say again that we expect to see more significant updates to Vision OS in June. Every June, Apple has its WWDC, Worldwide Developer Conference, where it talks about the new major versions of its operating systems coming. So that should, I'm really interested to see what's going to be there in Vision OS 2. That is an assumption, to be clear. There's no official confirmation that Apple will show Vision OS 2 at WWDC. That is an assumption, but I think it's a pretty solid assumption and very excited to see it. And I will just say this over again, especially for anyone that's joined in, spatial personas is the big thing I'm looking for, because not only does that enable third-party apps, but we've already seen in the presentation at WWDC last year that this is going to enable true spatial co-presence when doing things like co-watching or in, you know, playing a game and sitting across from someone. That's going to be a huge, huge improvement to Vision OS if you want to play with someone else who has a Vision Pro headset.
I'm enjoying people trying to guess the movie that I tried to hide. It was not Taylor Swift. I enjoyed Taylor Swift's concert, but I wasn't able to buy it. I could only rent it for $19.89. She priced it that way. And yeah, it wasn't. I own The Sound of Music. I wouldn't be embarrassed by The Sound of Music. It was not that one. We already talk about the delisting here yet?
Yeah, let's talk about that. A strange one. I think you were more onto this, so I'll let you describe it.
And so Warner Brothers Discovery is looking at delisting all of their Adult Swim games, and one of their Adult Swim games produced in partnership with Alchemy Labs is Rick and Morty Virtual Reality. Now, I reached out to Alchemy. We reached out to Alchemy to try to find out what's going to happen here to this game, and we got a statement from them about the situation. And Alchemy was basically of the mindset here that this game does not require a whole lot to maintain. It could just live and exist up there in perpetuity if they really wanted. But it's, we don't know. We don't know what Warner Brothers and Adult Swim Games are ultimately going to do with this game. And then there's really, this was a work-for-hire project from Alchemy for external partners, so they're not in control of the fate of this title. And in addition to that, there's really no motivation at the end of the day to do any more work into this title. So, like, if this gets delisted and people want to bring it back with any changes, there's no motivation to do that, to like go back and re-record things or add anything else. For people that are unfamiliar with the game itself, right, this is after Job Simulator, and Alchemy explored a lot of new ideas with this. They explored you going from position to position. They explored you going into kind of like alternate world from inside of this world. And it was a showpiece for Rick and Morty's humor back in the day, right in the early seasons of that show. But it would be a real bummer to see this bit of history disappear. And I think there's a lot of games over on the Steam ecosystem, games from 2016 era that we would hate to see put into a like a non-functional category on future devices. There's a lot of history. There's a lot of first-time VR experiences contained in all of that software, from Tilt Brush to Space Pirate Trainer, Super Hot. All these games that, like, Super Hot was a good example of something that's had a long success story off of Steam. But Virtual Reality, like, it got ported by a different company to PSVR 1, I think. And that's why this is kind of in the likeliest scenario to get put in the dead pile over time of games. Whereas Super Hot has been ported to multiple platforms, it's likely to live on in various incarnations, whereas Rick and Morty is a game that might not.
Yeah, this is very disappointing because, you know, we all wanted, or at least many people wanted, the opposite to happen. We wanted to see this title one day come to Quest and, you know, Vision Pro and Pico and other headsets that people own these days, and obviously PlayStation VR too. It's a very very tragic to see this because it's a fun game for anyone who's a fan of the show. This is the kind of thing they would absolutely love. It could even sell a headset from them. I remember back in the day, there were a few people who I was demoing VR to. You know, I've demoed VR to dozens, if not hundreds of people now. And there were a few people who they looked down the game list and they said, oh, there's a Rick and Morty game. And they tried it. And a few years later, they bought a headset because that demo just showed them what VR could be for them. So it does really suck to see this kind of delisting constantly happening across the games industry.
Little Scampy asking, does this game maybe still use Justin Roiland's voice? I believe that is an affirmative, and there would be no motivation to do anything else with that. So that is a complication for anyone that's followed sort of the history of Rick and Morty, the TV show, and what's happened there. That is an additional complication there that's related to the game. Yeah, I think we've covered the base of this game. I think we're probably ready to move on to the next subject here. Any comments you want to get into before we do that?
Yeah, there was a comment asking about how Apple's spatial personas will handle legs and whether they'll have them. The WWDC presentation last year indicated that they will not have legs. The short clip that was shown of spatial personas showed them as just torsos with arms and heads, just like we are. That's obviously because I doubt Apple wants to do synthetic legs without tracking, and Vision Pro currently does not track your legs. It's a problem that Meta got a lot of flack for, but is not exclusive to Meta. Many companies that didn't or don't have legs on their avatars, they just had torsos. That was for the longest time Rec Room until their very recent full body avatars. Microsoft's avatars never had legs, and yeah, other companies too. I guess Big Screen, nobody ever complained about Big Screen avatars not having legs. It was just, I think a lot of it was just anti-Meta hit there, and it's just the reality that if you don't have leg tracking, there are significant trade-offs with adding legs.
I'm seeing this question from Marcellus Wilson and a couple people mentioning Trover Saves the Universe on the last subject, the other game from that company. The reason I want to talk about Trover, why I think it's an interesting thing, is that's that kind of a theme in games of this, like while Trover had the little talking gun at you, like there's always a character making jokes at you in that game. I've seen them try to carry over that mechanic to other VR games. It's pretty common to have some kind of companion making commentary as you go. But I also want to point out that I think that trope or that idea in games is going out of style over time. Like there's been some really bad examples of the assistant following around and making commentary. And we have one going up on our channel, I think pretty soon here, that explains, like, I don't know. I don't want some wisecracking person following me around in VR unless I have the option to turn it off at any given moment.
Yeah. It sounds like it's very much so a personal taste thing. Let's discuss those AR glasses.
Oh, yeah. Onokazi saying Trover was not released under Adult Swim label, so it's not at risk. All right. Yes. Why don't you talk about this one, David? Because you follow this category of product very closely, and you have very strong feelings about sort of what devices like this are capable of and what they'll be capable of in a few years. Please break this down for our audience of exactly what these should be capable of and why they're going this particular route.
Yeah, so there are a lot of media glasses out there. That's a hugely popular category of products. Pretty much every Chinese consumer electronics product or company has come out with media glasses that, you know, you plug in a HDMI source or a USB-C for supported devices like your Nintendo Switch, and you have this kind of headlocked, fixed, relatively small field of view monitor, the kind of most X-Real glasses. But there have actually been a few true AR glasses. Glasses that can position virtual objects in your space that you can walk around and they will be on your floor. So, you know, you have a Pokemon on your floor and you walk around and it's really there, just like you would have in a mixed reality headset like Quest 3 or Vision Pro. But until now, all of those AR glasses, I say all of those, all two of them, the Nreal Lite from 2021 and the Xreal 2 Ultra from 2024, both of those are technically AR glasses. They are technically the first AR glasses, but they are powered by a smartphone, a specific smartphone, usually a specific flagship Samsung smartphone that you plug in via USB-C. And the phone is doing all of the heavy processing, all of the rendering, all of the real software is running, and the phone is also acting as the battery. What makes Ray Neo X2 special, and the news here is that the Indiegogo campaign for them has just launched, is that they are the first ever standalone AR glasses. In the same way that Quest is a standalone headset, you don't plug in a computer. It's not required. It's not like a PlayStation that you have to plug in like PlayStation VR. The computing and battery is on board. This is set to be, assuming it ships in April or later, as they said, April is their target, the first standalone AR glasses. Now, we've also talked about on this show many times about how the kind of AR glasses that people want in the future, the science fiction view, is years and years out. So what's happening here? How, if we've always told you that it's years and years until we can get these kind of AR glasses, can TCL, with their incubated company, Ray Neo, be launching them? The answer is that these make significant trade-offs and have very, very limited specs to achieve this. So to start, the displays in this are micro LED, micro LED. This will actually be the first product that isn't a giant $150,000 TV that has micro LED displays in it. And that's one of the reasons they're able to run this off a battery. However, they're 480p. They're the first generation of small micro LED displays. So they're 640 by 480, a tiny, abysmally small resolution. The field of view to get into this form factor of glasses is 25 degrees diagonal, which, as you can see in this depiction, is comically small. It's next to useless, essentially. And the battery life is only 3 hours. Now, they do have a display off mode where the glasses will just work like Meta Ray-Ban glasses and, you know, audio and image capture only, which will last for much longer than 3 hours. But if you want to actually use the AR features or even a HUD, that is only getting you 3 hours of battery. So this is, and I think, an exercise in just wanting to be in the history books. As I said, when this was announced, I think TCL and Ray Neo just want to be able to have a sentence in a history book that said the first standalone AR glasses were launched by TCL. Because to do this with today's technology has that comical list of trade-offs. To you get an incredibly limited device that is technically the first standalone AR glasses, but to do that, that's what you get. And I think what this shows you is just how far off the sci-fi AR glasses that we all want are. The fact that this is what's possible with today's technology. The analogy I make here is that trying to launch true AR glasses in the 2020s is like trying to make an iPhone in the 1990s. You could cobble together something in the 90s that somewhat resembles an iPhone, but the actual experience and specs would have been dramatically worse than what was achievable in 2007.
So let's talk. I want to talk about Pokemon Go here as the game that you would want to play in a VR headset with pass-through, or in an AR headset with just the offered field of view. And I think of this game in my head for years now, of just which category of device is going to get that game first. And I think the category of device to get Pokemon Go first is going to be a VR headset with wide field of view, and you can throw a Pokeball out there at a Pokemon out there. I don't think it's going to hit these glasses anytime soon or anything in this category of devices. I think it hits the VR headset first. The reason I bring that up is I'm seeing a lot of key people in our comments talk about Snap Spectacles and the fact that they didn't make the jump to consumers. It's something that David Heaney and I are on, trying to understand what is the robustness inside of Snap itself toward their AR initiative in the future. That's a company that's had massive layoffs, just like the rest of the tech industry. Then you've got a company like Niantic that has announced AR glasses built in partnership with one of the providers of the tech, and it basically looked like a little dev kit. and Snap had dev kits, right? That the spectacles were essentially dev kits. And here you've got another thing that's showing me is like, this is another company staking its game in this whole field. And what I have come back to again and again, and like, what I wonder is, what's the future of this entire product category if in the next 3 to 5 years, VR headsets are focused on things like varifocal or widening the field of view or increasing the frame rate beyond everything that they currently do. And these are still fundamentally failing to provide the same impressive gaming experience you got right out of the box on anything with a VR headset. So let me just go back here a second, David. You know, you were really careful in his review. So he did this review, I'll mention it again, 12,000 words of the Apple Vision Pro. And multiple times in that article, you called out people that were trying to give themselves clout by showing the Apple VR headset being used outdoors in ridiculous scenarios. But what I want to close the gap with you here is, do you think VR headsets are going to be used outdoors for a game like Pokemon Go before a headset like this is used in very large numbers for the same thing?
That's a fascinating question. And you're right to point out that there actually have been standalone AR glasses dev kits and prototypes made before this. And the Snap spectacles are a great example. We talked about this years ago in the show. You know, Snapchat has given out these spectacles to developers, and you kind of have an illustrative view of what this looks like. Very similar technology in the Snap spectacles versus what is coming in this Rainio X2 in terms of using these micro LED displays with waveguides to get a very narrow field of view. The Snap spectacles, their battery life is 30 minutes. So Rainio has gotten up to 3 hours, but Snap was, you know, from a lot of people, a quite remarkable admission that their battery life was 30 minutes. That's an example of how long that's going to be. So on the other hand, you're right to say that we're going to see in coming years rapid improvements in VR-style headsets that use pass-through. And while currently you wouldn't want to use Vision Pro outside for a couple of reasons, you could very easily see them getting to that level in a couple of generations, especially by the end of the decade, if we get, you know, much thinner and lighter headsets that have very good exposure control, that have the kind of reprojection that means that you can stably walk along without the whole view shaking. I can very much so see these things start to be used in parks for multiplayer games. We talked once about on this show about how we've already seen some prototypes of this. Someone built like a Minecraft clone that you play in the real world, and they played it out in their yard. We've seen all sorts of outdoor attempts here. One thing you're going to be very worried about is rain in any country or environment where it might rain at any time. You're not going to want to do that. It's going to be a very, very long time, I think, until we see water resistance in these kind of devices. But On a sunny day in good conditions, or even, you know, a day that is overcast but not likely to rain, it does seem likely that we're going to get there in the next 3 to 5 years, headsets that you can practically wear outside.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I think I'll just throw out there is, have you seen anything in the App Store on Vision Pro that makes use of GPS or like real-time location? I've seen like Pokemon Go, for example, or DoorDash. I don't see those apps over on the iOS compatible list games for Vision Pro.
I'll have to check this. Maybe while you're speaking, I can check in the background. But I think GPS is listed as one of the APIs that is not available on Vision Pro. So iPhone apps trying to use it can't. At the same time, I also think I might have read in the VisionOS documentation that they can do a request to your iPhone to ask for its location. I'll have to check that, but I don't think it's something that is right now Apple's focus or that any developer is encouraged to develop. If you do look in Apple's user guide for Vision Pro, they're very clear that you should not use this thing while moving outdoors. They don't discourage the idea of, you know, sitting on your porch on a nice day and using it to watch a movie or something, but they do not encourage you to actually walk. In fact, they specifically say do not use Vision Pro while walking about in the real world.
So a couple of really interesting things I just want to air out there. Number one, if that's true, and I think it is, I'm seeing in our comments that I think you're right on that, and I think that is the overall sense I've got. What what is their pathway to adding that functionality back in? So we started off the show with talking about the shared coordinate space, and we've talked about in the past the need for that shared coordinate space to be privacy secure, some way of sharing that data that isn't necessarily, like, people are willing to give up that privacy, I guess, in order to get the functionality. But if you were able to provide shared coordinate spaces in a privacy-preserving way, it would actually be a very significant thing to have over the long
term.
That
is how it works on Apple devices. It is device to device when you're doing shared space AR. That part is not the technical issue here. You can build apps that run on iPad and Vision Pro and have the same virtual objects in the same virtual space. That's possible. The big issues are just the things I pointed out in my review. The fact that the light seal doesn't block out light. So sunlight will go through the side of the light seal, reflect in the lenses, and make it a really bad visual experience. It's the vertical field of view. You're walking around outdoors, and you can't see below you enough to actually see where your foot's going next, which is a real safety issue. You know, I used this thing walking around in New York. I didn't want to capture it because I didn't want to encourage or try to, you know, jump on the same bandwagon of, oh, look, we're using it outside. But I used it to try it. And one of the things that I noticed is, you know, you come up to a step where your foot has to go up. I had to consciously keep looking down and checking for that step because the vertical field of view just isn't good enough for that kind of situational awareness. There's other issues, of course, around motion blur with the pass-through as you move your head. But these are all technical issues that are solvable, right? You get a light seal that is opaque. That solves that issue. You increase the vertical field of view. I find Quest 3 already has a good enough vertical field of view to walk around in the home relatively safely. Ideally, you want something that covers your full vertical field of view. Again, these are technical issues that one after the other can be knocked off. The thing that limits Quest 3's usage outdoor is that while it does do dynamic exposure correction, the dynamic range just isn't good enough to incorporate the full range of brightnesses you will see outdoors. Vision Pro does really, really well at that, and that's something I complimented in this review. The dynamic range on Vision Pro already is there for outdoor usage, so Apple have solved that part that Meta haven't, but Meta have solved, you know, the vertical field of view that Apple hasn't. These are all things that I expect by the end of this decade, headsets from all of these companies are going to do very well.
Lano saying, yeah, I didn't realize how much I subconsciously used my peripheral vision when moving around. It's definitely an issue when it comes to on-the-go usage. Yeah, I've done the same thing. And to David's point, you know, like, please consider becoming a member and subscribing to our work, supporting us directly. You know, that takes decision-making on his part to not promote a use case for this VR headset, despite the fact that we looked at the algorithm at the time and saw that, you know, YouTube is going crazy with attention to Apple Vision Pro. Twitter is going crazy with attention to Apple Vision Pro. And yeah, we could have produced a video very, very easily of Apple Vision Pro being used outdoors. And we specifically did not because it's stupid to do that. But the reason I walked down the stairs in the Apple Vision Pro, and then I did it quickly the next day without a Vision Pro, and I fell down the last step. Now, I can't say that they're related. I don't think that they're related. But Stanford University is looking into this right now. They're looking into the mismatch between what the pass-through is providing you and what you're seeing with your real eyes and the possible effects. And they warned of exactly what happened to me. Now, because I don't know if it was related, that, you know, I was just quickly running down the steps without a Vision Pro on, and I missed the last step because I was moving too quickly. But I, to David's point, like, when I went down those steps in the Vision Pro, I did it very carefully because I had to, like, look down and then do that. And it's very risky to consider that. I want to go back a minute to the APIs question. There are a couple things on those examples. The DoorDash, let's use DoorDash as a specific example. A properly working version of the DoorDash app in Apple Vision Pro would show your delivery person walking up to your front door. You would watch them move from the restaurant across the street. You would see them over there in the distance, a little red dot. And you'd see them move across the streets of your city. And you'd watch them move up the steps to your apartment or house, and then you'd get up, you take your headset off. Hopefully you don't go get the DoorDash package from the delivery person in the headset. maybe you do. Maybe that's where we're going, right? You go in, you go to your front door, you don't even see the person who delivered it to you, but you watch them go on their whole journey through the world to your house. What I wonder is, did someone at DoorDash say, you know, that's actually not an experience we want our users to have? We think that's actually too impersonal and too messed up a use case of our technology, or is it simply the technical problem that you're discussing?
I think in that situation, you know, if you want to do like a direct overlay, you're going to find the GPS just isn't accurate enough in cities for that.
I've watched my delivery person warp all over New York because of that, and that would be really weird to see in Vision Pro. Yeah.
Yeah, this is actually a very interesting problem, because the problem is the giant buildings. New York is a perfect example. I've only been once, but I noticed this immediately when I was trying my GPS. It's terrible. GPS doesn't work in a city like New York because you have all of these buildings blocking the signal and causing all kinds of reflection with the signal. So one of the techniques that is used instead of GPS, if you use Google Maps, for example, you will find there's an option called VPS, a visual positioning system, where you lift your phone up and you have a kind of AR view on your phone. And what they do there is, instead of relying on GPS to localize you, they compare the landmarks that are being seen, the image that's being seen, to their street view imagery on file. And from having a precise position of street view, which the cars use a much more precise LiDAR-based navigation system to position themselves, they compare that and they can then know exactly where you are. And you can get really, really, really precise positioning with this instead of GPS. It's quite similar to how self-driving cars position themselves, especially the Tesla ones that don't have LiDAR, but they rely on vision. They look at their environment, they find high contrast features that happen to exist in the mapping data set, and they position themselves. Now, it's very, very possible that AR glasses could do the same thing, that they could constantly take pictures of what they're seeing, compare it to street view or a similar kind of data set, and find their position. The problem is that the DoorDash driver themselves would need to be wearing glasses for this. Technically, there's no reason that the Ray-Ban Meta glasses couldn't do this today. It might be a very power draining thing for them to do. It might be because you're continuously having to capture imagery, but you know, they already have image analyzing AI on these glasses. It's not a huge leap to say that they could do precise localization.
Yeah, and so this example that I've used of the DoorDash delivery driver watching them and then not actually interacting with them at all is something I want our audience to think about. It's something I want the developers out there to think about, the direction we're moving with this technology and its overall disconnection, right? That it creates between us, right? Like that's we talk about these technologies disconnecting us. And we never fall into that kind of narrative, right? Like that's the dystopian fear that a lot of people looking at this technology imagine, when they're just not respecting that you put on the headset and you get real social interaction in many, many ways and many different platforms. And it isn't just shooting guns and blowing up people. It's a lot of different experiences that are just fun to have with another human being. Right. But let's talk about the real world human interactions that are like changing or becoming something different because of this technology at the very same moment. We need to have a full view of how that changes over time. Are we ready to move on to the next subject soon?
I think, yeah, soon we'll move on. But the last thing I want to say is I'm still intensely skeptical of pass-through VR-style headsets being used in the same way that glasses eventually will. Like, I agree that we're going to see outdoor use cases, like you go to a park and you have your headset in your backpack and you take it out and put it on and play a game with your friends in the park, right? I could totally see that happening in 3 to 5 years, that becoming a quite major use case. But what I don't think is that you're going to walk out the home with this thing on your head and walk about and do your daily journey and you know get on the bus and the subway and no. Go into a coffee shop with this thing on. I don't think that's going to be something that people do for quite some time, if ever. I think that's where these glasses will shine. The social acceptability, the fact that you have battery off means transparent, not blackness. The fact that you know, it's a lot lighter, and the operating systems are going to be subtly different, right? Apple very interestingly described Vision OS as its first spatial operating system. That indicates to me that when they eventually get glasses, they're going to be called something like Glasses OS. And probably you're going to have a situation where a lot of Vision OS apps can run on Glasses OS if they have, you know, certain requirements that they fulfill and don't use certain features that would only be possible in a pass-through headset, right? But I do think that the fundamental design of Glasses OS, if it's called that, is going to be very different, because something that is designed to be used as you're walking around the real world with kind of giving you persistent notifications is very different than something that you want to, let's be real, the vast majority of Vision OS use cases are for sitting in a seat stationary in your own home.
Yeah. So there's David going to the core there. And I'm actually really enjoying this conversation. There's some really active, interesting comments building on what we're doing here, what we're talking about. Where is the one from Minx? I think every generation we gain a new form of interaction while losing another. You're getting the internet, mobile phones, now hopefully AR. It's interesting. I've done reports on the way technology develops, and you can go back 150, 200 years into technology's history, and there's still some company, some person in the world making an old wheelbarrow from the 1800s still today. Like, it's still, legacy technologies don't always die. I loved in Dune, they had the cylindrical recorders for 10,000 years in the future for how to send messages over the expanse of space without computers. That's the same as technology we had 100 years ago. Very interesting ideas there. But sorry, go ahead, David. I got you going there.
Firstly, I was just going to point out that we have a new member in the comments. So hello to Lano, and thank you for subscribing to the Upload VR channel. The other thing I was just going to say is that that actually has a name, that effect, the Lindy effect, where the longer something has been around, the more likely it is to stay around, which is very fascinating because, you know, we do think about the world changing so dramatically, but there are some things that we use that are essentially the same as they were 1,000 years ago or 500 years ago or 200 years ago.
Yeah. All right. So, and then going back to this sort of development we're talking about, and my struggles as a reporter, our struggles as a publication, I don't believe any of the measures that we have, I don't think there's data to really help us discern how the world is going to change before and after glasses replace phones and VR headsets replace personal computers. And the example I come back to, and it's a lot of what David is saying here, how many hours per day does the average human spend indoors versus outdoors? And how is that going to change over the course of the 21st century? I fundamentally think that question boils down to the market opportunity available for each of these categories of devices. If you give people a lot of reasons to stay indoors and do all of their entertainment indoors, they're going to spend a lot of their time indoors. Now, you've got Mark Zuckerberg and very rich people that can jet from place to place all the time, and they're showing off how amazing smart glasses can be. Mark Zuckerberg is out there putting out multiple videos showing how you can use multimodal AI to learn about the environment around you. One of the videos he put out there showed, explain what snow is to me like a caveman does. And sure enough, his AI starts responding to him like a caveman does. How many people are going to be living their lives like Mark Zuckerberg in the future, going from place to place, traveling wherever they want, versus how many are going to be spending their hours primarily in their own home in private?
It's a very interesting question. I would like to believe that the answer is that, you know, people will still want to leave their home for social connection. I think that virtual reality has a massive potential to dramatically improve our current remote communication, which is disembodied phone calls and video games, or, you know, little webcam views on rectangles in our hands. I think VR is going to dramatically improve the way that we interact remotely, but I dearly hope that it never replaces meeting up in person. And I think that shared social experiences in the real world should and hopefully will remain meaningful, and to travel to those destinations, be it, you know, just to go and get food with someone or to go have a walk in the park, that's where you're going to want to put on your AR glasses and not your VR style headset.
I still haven't finished Rainbow's End. If any readers out there have watched all of Rainbow's or read all of Rainbow's End, very, very good book. But yeah, I need to finish it. But near the beginning of that book, they talked about having to pay a fee to touch a physical object, because touching things becomes so much more expensive in the future because of the overall trends we're talking about here. Let's move on and talk about our last subject here. Some really fascinating comments.
Let's just obviously summarize what we say on every podcast, just because we were talking about glasses. Let's just be clear again that our view here is that pass-through VR style headsets are going to get dramatically, dramatically better, be it thinner, cheaper, lighter, better pass-through, long before AR style glasses are practical as a mass market product. So I think that is pretty much our view at Upload VR.
Ross, short-term, a techno-feudalism, long-term Star Trek. Ross, you are my person. You understand me. I think that's where we are, and that's where I want to go. Star Trek is in my mind, is where I want to be. It's where I want us as a people to go, because, that model in my head of holodeck on down, right? The thing I love about Star Trek, I'm just going to give me a moment to go off on this. The way the people interact with the voice input of their computers, right? Someone three decades ago wrote down into fiction, into the stories of Star Trek, people having to tell the computer exactly what you want verbally in very, very specific language. And over the last 30 years with Google teaching us how to dumb down our questions into key terms, we've lost that ability to some degree. We've lost the ability to really clearly enunciate what we want to a computer, what our question is, with absolute clarity. And that's what things like ChatGPT or natural language interfaces allow us. It gives some power back to people who know what to do with the words in their head to get answers out of the computer or build very detailed worlds all around them. And yeah, we're moving towards that with the holodeck and with Star Trek. And even with the current move towards AI, a lot of the discourse, David, correct me if I'm wrong here, a lot of discourse revolves around people who don't know how to use language really, really well, threatened by what ChatGPT could take away from them. Is there anything you have to add to that, David? Am I wrong on my analysis there of why people are sort of so confused about what ChatGPT and what AI generation offers them?
I think this is a massive conversation in itself that we should definitely have at some point. Hopefully, some week when we see some sort of prototype of a system like a holodeck that allows you to verbally describe the virtual environment you want and see it come to life. We've seen prototypes of this shown by Meta, but never released. I'm very sure that we will see sometime this year someone release something like that, where you start in a blank environment and using your voice, you conjure up the exact virtual environment and world you want. I am incredibly excited about the, such an overused term, but truly the democratization of content creation that will become possible in that. You're right to say that there is massive pushback. Without dismissing these people, there has been massive pushback for the majority of disruptive technologies that relate to creation throughout the past 200 years. Generally, it doesn't matter in the long term. It's just noise in the void.
Daniel Leeper saying, when HMDs can turn my wife into Margot Robbie, we've reached the goal. I've covered this with my spouse. I am not allowed to reskin my spouse as anything other than a cat. Maybe they'll look like a cat, want to look like a cat once in a while. But no, I'm not allowed to reskin my spouse as a human.
And I very rarely do I use the word dystopian, because I find it's almost always hysteria, but I think that specific idea to me is deeply dystopian.
We haven't seen the YouTube videos doing that yet, right? Like the software isn't good enough on Apple Vision Pro to show that nightmare scenario. But the cat sounds worse. Yeah. Well, I haven't done it yet. I haven't reskinned them as anything. But I'm just telling you what I've got permission for and what I don't. So
I think that is going to be
ByteDance here.
The key there is going to be having the consent of the person that you're looking at. And that opens up some serious philosophical questions there as to how, on a technical level, do you even get their consent? And is that something that systems are going to require? I'd very much so hope so, that if you're looking at someone and trying to depict them like that, but you can make an argument that why does someone else get to decide what you see through your eyes? It's a deeply philosophical question with many valid viewpoints.
Well, let's go to the flip side of it. Let's go before we move on. So we're not going to move on to this. This is too juicy a subject. VR chat. VR chat is a place where you consent to come into that location as a completely different person, an avatar that's imagined completely from, maybe you had someone you paid someone to build the avatar for you because it's that important to you that this avatar looks like you want it. I've often wondered about this idea of a dating app that slowly, progressively over the course of the dating, you remove this identity you've approached to. So all the dating apps currently have you leading with photos of yourself that are usually very highly posed, very highly selected, spent weeks or months trying to curate the right list of photos to attract the right partner to your dating profile. Well, what if you could strip away all of that effort and just throw out something that represents all of your fandoms? And as you slowly get into the dating ecosystem with the person, you reveal more about yourself. Where that falls apart is, right, every one of the apps leads with sex appeal, right? That's the idea of leading with the photos of yourself. That's what Tinder has turned into, a business model that, you know, everywhere you go, there are profiles on Tinder. My point being there that, like, there is a way you can connect with people without physical interaction leading the way. And I don't know that people want to do it. I don't know that people are ready for it, but I know that there are people trying out apps and trying to explore this idea down the line. And I'm really curious as people, as mainstream starts adopting these headsets, whether we could have dating change in any significant way.
Yeah, I think that opens up the old question of, you know, what is the difference between what people say and what they actually think when it comes down to their dating preferences? Is like when people make claims about how they weigh personality and appearance, how does that relate to the decisions they actually make and how they truly internally weigh personality and appearance? Everyone has their own view on this. There's probably research on this, but I would suspect that people truly weigh the physical aspect a lot more than they would claim they do.
Well, like, there's a term for that, right? There's a term for catfishing, right? Where it's the reverse of this. I'm asking, like, if you, I don't know. I don't know what the flow is. It's a completely different flow than everything else. And you're absolutely right. Like, you don't want to catfish everyone you meet, but I guess I'm arguing that there may be a way. There may be a way to build something around this. And it would be interesting to lead with, like, to force an ecosystem around your interests. Like, I don't know, Hinge tried to lay off of the photos-based swiping and actually have you put prompts up of answers to questions to try to get to this idea of let's connect more than just the physical appearance. But you're absolutely right, David. Like, there's a reason Tinder leads the pack here in terms of dating apps.
Yeah, someone in the comments saying Love is Blind AR app. I think that's a television show where they take this concept. They have people speak to each other before they see each other, and then they pick out who they want, and then they meet each other in person. And I think from what I've heard, the show kind of proves the opposite thesis, that once they meet each other, it all does become about the physical appearance. But again, maybe I just have too skeptical, cynical a view on this.
I appreciate all the skepticism and all the cynical, but where I'm arguing is it's a software problem. Like, I'm arguing it's a problem to be solved over the time of, and there's a lot of devs out there trying to solve it.
I just think you can't change human nature with software. You know, you're going to make that connection, and if someone sees someone and they're not physically attracted, they will retroactively decide that the emotional connection was not up to what it was.
All right, let me ask a really, I'm upset that I've asked this question on VR Download. I'm upset that our conversation put this question in my head. But how many of the people who live inside VR chat as their most active users have had sex as their avatars? It has to be more than one. There has to be more than one person that's done that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're right. It does open up an entirely new type of relationship. Obviously, this is something that has been happening since AOL chat rooms, since Second Life. But with VR, it becomes a much more real experience, that it feels a lot more like you're actually there with someone, even though you're not. And we have seen examples of, you know, relationships formed, I'm sure of a romantic and a quasi-sexual nature, just entirely through platforms like VRChat.
All right, let's move on to ByteDance, because we're gonna go off. Hang on. Oh, wait, you've got one more comment. All right, sorry.
So no, a commenter has pointed out, I think I've lost him, Chris Kyler has rightly pointed out that we forgot a topic. We listed a topic at the start and we went past it. I think that was probably my mistake. So we'll quickly cover that first. It's just lying down mode. Quest V63 adds a lying down mode on Quest 2 and Quest Pro. There's not a huge amount to say about this, other than I know that there were some people who were really keenly interested in seeing this come to fruition. So this mode lets you, you know, enable it, lie back, recenter, and your virtual coordinate space will be tilted upwards so that you can play any app without the developer needing to support it on your ceiling, essentially. It's not there for Quest 3. It's there for Quest 2 and Quest Pro.
Yeah, I saw a couple of people in our comments really wanting that feature. It's actually a bummer that we missed it, because it does seem to be one of the most important things to our audience, and so many people have Quest out there. But it's obviously a big bummer that it didn't launch in Quest 3 yet. I would expect that to be added at some point fairly soon. I wouldn't expect them to wait too long on it.
Yeah, Andrew Bosworth, the CTO of Meta, confirmed on Instagram in an Ask Me Anything session earlier today that it will come to Quest 3 eventually. Quest 3 is a slightly different tracking system, because it also has the ability to generate a 3D mesh of your environment. So they probably need to figure out, how does that work? If content is being set on a horizon that is assumed to be the real horizon, you know, your flat floor in relation to a 3D mesh, how do you just rotate that up and still keep the mixed reality aspect of the app? There's some difficulties there. What's really interesting about the V63 update was Meta's announcement included a screenshot showing this lying down mode listed in the experimental options, but it also showed two options that have not officially been announced yet as actually arriving. One was external microphone and the other was airplane travel mode. So it seems like USB external microphones are coming soon. They actually edited the blog post afterwards to remove this. So this was obviously an accidental leak. So expect in some future version, be it V64, 5, maybe V66, USB microphones. And I really want this, because I can then use Quest 3 on the show again. For any of our commenters that don't know, our regular viewers will know this, I don't use Quest 3 because it has the same issue as Quest Pro for me, where my mouth being so close to the microphone means that when I make P noises, plosives, like P, it causes a harsh popping effect that the audience does not like. So I sit and endure the original Quest 2, which is what I'm wearing now and what I wear every week, to avoid this being an issue. And if we get USB mic support, I'll be able to plug in an external microphone and have a really high quality voice while still using my Quest 3. I think Ian's obviously gone off to do something in the real world here. He's careening in front. Yeah, the other one being airplane travel mode. We talked about this before on the show a few weeks ago, because Meta announced it was coming eventually, the ability to use Quest 3 on a plane, and presumably Quest 2 and Pro as well, whereas right now the tracking will go haywire if you try that. And that's a feature of Apple Vision Pro, the travel mode.
Yeah, sorry about that, David. I'm trying to save my battery here. I'm at 4%, and I just need to plug into my high output port here, which I do have in my office now, for those people that have watched us for a long time and know that we frequently run out of power here. I was a little bit more prepared now. The external mic is a very, very big issue. And going back to full circle, our question with the Apple Vision Pro avatars, the personas, the one thing that I am missing from streaming from my Apple Vision Pro, in a sort of opposite of this show where we've got, like David said, all these things around us to present in a very controlled way to our audience from these camera angles. In Vision Pro, I could walk around my whole house. I could show a lot of content, but what's missing there is a microphone, a lapel microphone, to capture my personal audio quality in really high high resolution.
And I find the Vision Pro mic is great. I find it's excellent. I don't think it's a huge issue there.
It's a software issue. Like I think the microphone is good, but I can't record the microphone audio while doing a FaceTime call. So it's a software related thing to their like security system. Whereas over here, the microphone, the hardware itself is a limiting factor, but we really need it to improve our audio quality dramatically.
Yeah, well, Quest didn't have its own ability to record the microphone for years. You know, it took years until there was a record microphone option added. Or was it, I've actually forgotten, was it that you already could, but you couldn't disable it? Either way, it didn't have a toggle for microphone recording for years. So maybe that's something we'll see in VisionOS 2, the ability to record your microphone alongside screen recording, which would obviously be very interesting. I wonder if you record a spatial video.
I can do it. I can do recording. I just can't do it while it's on a FaceTime call. Like I can include my microphone on video.
That's probably like an app exclusive thing then, where one app uses the microphone at once. That's a huge issue on Android as well, where, you know, you have to like route the microphone through one service and each app has to kind of like take the microphone packets out of that service. It's very frustrating. It's interesting to see Vision Pro might have that same issue. But yeah, I'm very excited for those two potentially leaked features. Lying down mode, I don't care about personally. I don't like the idea of the floor not being the floor personally, but I know from our comments and from social media, there are some people who really love this and they want that. And yeah, I'm glad Meta has made it an experimental feature for the people who want it. Options are always good, even if I don't want them personally.
We ran the article and you just explained to me how it functions in a different way than I realized even from that article, right? Yeah, I don't want the floor going haywire. And
well, how else?
Pro, it doesn't go haywire, right?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, if you're in a VR game, to play it lying down, right? So when you say you want to play Beat Saber lying down, the virtual floor in Beat Saber is going to have to go up there. How else would you play it?
I was thinking of the home screen. Okay, so yeah, no, I get per app. I can understand per app changing that. It's when you come back to the home space and have that being at an angle that would be a little bit jarring, I think, to me. Like I don't know.
That's what people want. I mean, I understand. I don't like the idea at all. I think I've always been a huge proponent of not just the floor being aligned. I have always been. So when you make a Quest app, you can choose between letting the user, when they recenter their head height as well to a fixed position that, you know, they recenter and your head becomes that position, or you can use floor level tracking where the user can recenter themselves horizontally, but their headset will always be at the relation to the floor that it really is. And that's what I do in this app. It's what I love in other apps. I hate not having the virtual floor be aligned with my real floor. I think there's something that matters there, especially in room scale, when you're walking around, for you to feel your feet on the floor at the same visual distance and you see your floor. To me, that is like a VR design best practice that should never be violated. And so many apps violate it, and I hate it so much. And this is why I hate this idea personally. But again, other people want it. I'm glad they have it. Especially people who have reduced mobility and accessibility issues that mean they require it. For them, I am deeply glad that this feature exists.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah, that's a must for a lot of people. Let's move on to this final subject here that's been teasing us. ByteDance trademarking the Pico 4S with icons depicting its controllers that indicates it might look something like the Quest 3 controllers. David, why don't you get into this and tell us what to expect from Pico.
Yeah, so as you say, they have trademarked Pico 4S. So this comes after, in December, there was a report from The Information, an outlet that has accurately reported things about Quest and Apple Vision and Pico in the past. And they claimed in December in this report that Pico 5 has been cancelled because ByteDance, their sales expectations for Pico 4 fell short of them. So that report also said back in December that Pico was going to release a refreshed version of Pico 4. However, it did not give any details. So it seems quite clear that this trademark for Pico 4S is the refreshed version of Pico 4. Now, the only specific detail we pretty much know about this is the controllers, as you say, because in the Pico streaming software that's used, their equivalent of Airlink, on the PC side, there was this new folder that appeared called Icons 4S. And in this same resources folder, you have the icons for the controllers for Pico Neo 3 and Pico 4. And you'll notice that these icons have a no tracking ring. They are like Quest 3's controllers in that they're ringless. And there also is a larger SVG file that shows the actual shape and design of this Pico 4S controller. And again, these are called 4S, Icons 4S. Now, the interesting thing about that was that if you watch our show or read our site, you'll know that back in September, there are images leaked online of a ringless Pico controller on Chinese social media. The Chinese equivalent of Reddit is what I was told by a Chinese source that that website is called. And you can see this image here. So it seems pretty clear that those what's seen in these images matches up with what's seen in those icon files. So it seems pretty clear that potentially these were supposed to be the controllers for the Pico 5, but Pico 5 got cancelled, and now they're going to use these controllers in Pico 4S instead. As for what else to expect in Pico 4S, we don't know. There are no direct sources of what to expect. My speculation is that this is going to, at the minimum, include a chip upgrade. I think they're going to use the XR2 Gen 2 in Quest 3. Usually when products are named S, right? Like the original, back the iPhones about 10 years ago, the S model would have relatively few design improvements, if any, but they would have a chip upgrade, right? That was, Apple started this with the iPhone 3GS and the iPhone 4S. It would be S for speed, a speed upgrade. I think in the wake of the cancellation of Pico 5, Pico is going to say, you know, we have this design. There is a new chip available. We have these new controllers developed already. Let's upgrade the chip, put in these new controllers, and get this thing out on the market.
Yeah. So there was that question very early in the show wondering whether Pico would do this at GDC in a couple weeks here, whether they would formally announce a follow-up. I put this question to you privately, David, before we published our article on this. What was the chance that a Pico 4S actually ships with the same processor as the previous Pico, and you basically said absolutely almost none on the chance of that. And the reason I think that's an interesting question to ask is, what is the likelihood of a Quest 3 Lite getting announced here at GDC parallel to anything that Pico does? Now, the comment that mentioned earlier that Pico has a booth at GDC, Pico has had a booth at a couple conferences and then didn't announce anything at those conferences, or announced really weird things at those conferences that were not the next big thing. So we can't infer or get anything out of Pico other than whatever they actually come out and announce. When we get to it, they could be leaky, so we might see something reveal. But the reason I ask about this Quest 3 Lite is, right, we expect the Quest 3 Lite to have the same chipset as the main Quest 3, except to have a few things like lenses may be a little bit different, and maybe the tracking system is a little bit different, right? Those are the things we expect to be different in a Quest 3 Lite?
Yeah, the lenses. We suspect that based on the sourcing, the Quest 3 Lite will have Quest 2's lenses and Quest 3's chip.
Okay. So what that all sets up is, Pico got crushed to smithereens in a really embarrassing manner the last time they tried to release a headset. They could only release in a few regions. They got to the edge of releasing in the United States and then pulled back and then laid off a large segment of their workforce. And then they're launching something else with a new crew of people all building it. And I don't know. We had to stop recommending Pico as a device. Like, it made sense. We stopped recommending Quest 2. We're at the cusp of not recommending PSVR 2. I don't know that anyone should go and get a Pico 3 except for PCVR games, right? That was the one exception we said Pico 3 was a really good choice for, right?
Yeah, and Pico 4 as well, obviously. Mm.
Yeah, sorry, and Pico 4S. Yeah, so now we're at Pico 4S. All right, so what is it going to take for Pico to compete with what Meta is doing? And the reason I brought up the processor question is if they launch anything that is even a dollar more expensive than Meta, how can they hope to do anything close? Like, I can't imagine anything will change about the story that just happened, even if they decide to launch in the United States. Maybe they sell a few more, but they're competing against a company that's cheaper with a lot more content. And I don't understand how they hope to do that unless they like get this out for $250 with an XR2.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, that I do think if they launch in America, it becomes a lot more significant, but there's no reason that this would launch in the US when the Pico 4 didn't. The reasons behind that are likely to do with the congressional scrutiny of TikTok, and obviously ByteDance being the same company behind TikTok and Pico, they're not going to go away. The hardware is not going to change that. I think what we're seeing here isn't some grand strategy. I think what we're seeing here is just Pico saying, as I said, we have a headset out, there's a new chip, we canceled our new successor that was going to have XYZ features, probably, you know, eye tracking, depth sensors and all this stuff. But that doesn't mean we can't use the same design we have. You know, we were still producing these things. Why not just swap out the chip and add some new controllers? You know, because I see a comment here from Artful saying, I feel like they will add the single camera per eye tracking from the Pico Pro Enterprise. I seriously doubt that. Like that's probably what Pico 5 would have been, right? The canceled headset. This is the backup plan. This is, we canceled our next headset. Let's upgrade the old one to make it at least remotely competitive. Now, it does open up an interesting question of, is it possible Pico 4S will be a massive cost cutter? These style of controllers are slightly cheaper than the other style, but not enough to do serious cost reduction. And as you say, this is happening as the rumored Quest 3 Lite is likely to arrive with Fresnel lenses and a single LCD panel. It is possible that Pico 4S is going to actually do some serious reversion from Pico 4, have Fresnel lenses, a single LCD panel, and that new chip to just try and drive the cost down and directly compete with Quest 3 Lite, to try and maybe get rid of some of the losses that ByteDance has incurred here. Because if they at least shoot this thing out to a bunch of people, they can get people buying content on their store that they invested in, build up the platform, and kind of, you know, rescue this. It's possible that they come in and decide to make something that is equivalent to Quest 3 Lite. The problem there is that even if that was what they want, that still means they have to go and design a different headset, right? Theoretically, they could bring out the Pico Neo 3, the Pico Neo 3 Link, and kind of add the XR2 chip to it. At that point, though, you know, that's a very old design. They probably have to make some significant changes to it. Just the naming to this just says to me, this is just the headset with the chip. Maybe we'll see some other improvements like stereo, mixed reality, you know, two cameras instead of one. But as for things like eye tracking or like depth sensors, it just seems like if it had significant upgrades like that, they would call it Pico 5. They wouldn't call it Pico 4S.
Yeah. So I think our audience there has their expectations set in the right place. I noticed Guy Godin saying everything boils down to the price on this. And that is absolutely true. And we are all going to be waiting in anticipation of what that amount is. I do wonder if they choose a subsidizing route, if they really got their money in a row to kind of decrease the cost up front and make that real investment like Meta is making in trying to get people to adopt their ecosystem, maybe they could achieve a lower price than we've seen before. I don't know.
Maybe, but it just seems like ByteDance isn't committed to this anymore. They are looking at their long-term project Swan. And we go back to that same information report in December.
You're like, okay, that makes me mad. Okay, I'm actually mad, right? Like, how do you release a new headset while not being committed to it?
Because you have the design, because it's low effort, right? That's the whole point. If you just swap the chip, you're not having to go through the same design process as releasing a new headset, right? They're not having to do all this redesign. And, you know, there's a massive amount of difference between taking the same design and just swapping out one component and doing a new design that has a bunch of different features. The difficulty, the cost of doing that, everything from, you know, building up the new production line with the new mold and doing new testing for drop tests and kind of redesigning the wireless antennas and doing all this blah, blah, blah. the cost of that is so much more than using a proven existing design that you've already figured out how to mass produce and just swapping a component like the chip. That's why this is happening. Because yeah, it's so low effort, they might as well do it. It's not like, again, I don't think there's a grand strategy here. I don't think they're saying, well, if we do this and this, we can get into this market and recover. I think they're literally just saying, fuck it, let's do it. We have the new chip, we have the headset, let's do it.
All right, well, remove leadership from the top down and start with a new crew if you're really going to go that effort, is what I'm going to say to that. There's no grand strategy, right? You're not going to change the world without a grand strategy here, I don't think. But you might change China.
Yeah, but I do think their grand strategy exists. I just don't think it's for these near-term Pico headsets. As I was saying there, that information report in December mentioned that Pico was working on a much further out headset called Project Swan, which is going to be their Apple Vision Pro competitor. I imagine that's where all of their hardware engineering talent is right now, where all of their money and their focus is. It's on Project Swan. They want to release, you know, a year or 2 years or 3 years down the line, probably on the 2 to 3 year time scale, a headset that has, you know, the really high quality pass through, OLED micro displays, all of that to compete with Apple Vision Pro and focus on the media watching use cases and things like that, rather than this low cost VR gaming market, which I think they've pretty much realized that as hard as they try, unless they try much, much, much harder, without being in North America, they're just not going to be able to compete with Meta on.
Yeah, so Onokazi's comment here, kind of the same energy that Sony announced PC functionality for PSVR 2. And I appreciate that because it is directly in line with your narrative of Sony having to, you know, believing in something else and then having to scramble because it didn't work. And the reason I get angry or the reason this is so frustrating is the people in our comments that wanted to buy Pico before it released were severely disappointed by what actually came out and the support that it got, where it got released, all of those things. And why would anyone trust them again?
Yeah, which is deeply disappointing because, you muted yourself there. The promise of Pico was that it would be a real competitor to Meta, right? It still is the only real competitor to Quest, to like standalone headset you can buy for the $300 to $500 range that has a gaming on the store and track controllers. There is nothing else that actually scratches that. It's theoretically the HTC Vive Elite kind of covers that, Vive XR Elite, but not really, because it's like $1,000 and it doesn't have, you know, even half the games, for example. The only Quest competitor that really meaningfully exists in the core use cases that Meta goes for is Pico. And I hope they continue to exist for that reason at the least. And I hope that they are eventually able to solve the issues that mean that they can't get into the North American market, because let's see competition happen. Let's not see it be artificially constricted because of reasons related to TikTok, which is a completely different venture to this. I'm not making any statement on the political legitimacy of this. I'm just saying from a VR market perspective, Pico has not been given a fair chance. It's not like they fairly competed and lost. They were only in some regions and they weren't able to actually compete in the United States. It could have been a very different history had Pico launched in the United States with those pancake lenses and a slimmer design a year before Quest 3.
Yeah, this is a very, very difficult area for us to talk about. We're dealing with global corporations like Apple and Meta that operate very selectively in very certain ways in various regions around the world. And we see Apple and Epic Games at each other's throats over a nation-by-nation disagreement over how you apply the rules of the platform. And it's wild that's where we are in the history of computing. The issue that I have, and I see it a little bit in our comments being brought up, is really what level of understanding of these fundamental technologies do regulators have in each of those regions? And what sort of artificial things is that imposing upon these companies, rather than giving us legitimate, real competition to choose with our dollars, right? You're giving Meta an extraordinary amounts of power by not standing up major competition to it.
So I understand right now that there is a bill being formulated at some early level in the United States that would force ByteDance to sell off TikTok. It's been falsely reported in some places as a TikTok ban, but the actual bill I've read some of it is suggesting that foreign companies that have any ownership of them held by the governing party of a foreign adversary, such as the Chinese Communist Party, would have to sell off. That's something I would like to see happen to Pico. Imagine a world where Amazon bought Pico and continued it on and launched it in the United States and competed. And then you no longer have the political issue around China owning the company, but you still have Pico existing as a real competitor. And then it gets to launch, owned by an American company that has the resources to fight Meta or Microsoft. Or, you know, I think Amazon would be a great match for it. I think Amazon would be the kind of company that would want to enter this space and doesn't want to have to start from scratch and could pick up a company like Pico. As to whether that will ever actually happen, I guess that depends on how this bill goes and whether European countries start to adopt that and what ByteDance wants to do. There may be a point at which ByteDance does cut its losses and say, if we can't get into the North American market, let's just get some of our money back and sell this off to an American company.
Let's see. Some interesting comments here. Where is it? Yeah, Guy mentioning about the different landscape that might have formed, and there are various points in this history where there were different futures, and it was something that you've pointed out multiple times. The future is not written yet. I think what we have trouble with on this show, and our audience has been so supportive of like giving us the space to conjecture about the future, right? We don't like to conjecture about what's happening at present. We like to report about what's happening at present, but we think about the different futures we might have and the different ways they can go. And what I'm seeing and what we're trying to tell our audience here is that Meta is going to knock it out of the park this year with the Meta Quest 3 Lite and the Meta Quest 3 with what I would imagine is a slate of content that is going to shock a lot of people and surprise a lot of people, because I'm just convinced that some of that content was held from the Quest 3 launch. Some of it was needed to do battle against Apple. And where this goes next, what I'm trying to lay out for our audience here is Apple appears to be placing orders for hardware, and they're making plans for their next generation of a lower cost device based on like the available market. There's only so much manufacturing capacity in the world for making VR headsets. There's literally only a certain number of plants in the world to make a certain number of displays. And as David has like really harped on in our show, a bunch of the displays that are coming out of these facilities aren't usable. They can't put them into the machines. That's the constraining factor on Apple's headset. It costs so dang much because they can't make enough of the displays at a low enough cost without having, you know, like one pixel dead in the middle of the thing and ruining your VR experience. Something like that. That's a little bit of conjecture there. But where I'm going with this is, if you aren't careful, Meta and Apple alone are going to go and buy up all the supply chain. They're going to buy the capacity for 5 to 10 years out. They're going to buy the companies that supply chain them. And the best displays in the world will only go to these two or three manufacturers. It's going to take time for everyone else to catch up and actually get that remaining supply out of the product lines in order to ship their also ran headset. So this is all saying, like, you're running out of time. You're running out of time to compete with what Apple and Meta are doing. And David is so good about pointing out, like, there's still a chance. Like, the future isn't written. Meta doesn't have to be the leader here. Apple doesn't have to be the leader here. There are other companies that can surprise us. But what we're running out of time.
Yeah, that's definitely, for sure, the biggest aspect in the supply chain side of these headsets is going to be who can secure the OLED microdisplay supply. When it comes to Samsung, which, you know, plans to introduce its headset at the end of this year, powered by Google, they have their own Samsung display that they can access. So they have that sorted. You're right to say that much of Meta's relationship with LG that we've talked about before may be in LG display, in them building up an OLED micro display production capacity. And obviously Apple currently has Sony, and they are in talks with some Chinese suppliers like BOE. BOE also has supplied Meta with many of their displays in their past headsets, LCD displays, to be clear. But you know, you're absolutely right to say that these companies are going to be trying to secure these OLED supply chain. I would say that ByteDance, because they're in China, will have probably a lot easier time getting supply from the likes of BOE and SIA and some of the Chinese suppliers. So I think ByteDance is probably already looking at that when it comes to Project Swan. You know, maybe they'll call it Pico Vision or something, you know, something along those lines. But I don't think, I think ByteDance is in there early enough. But you're right to say that if another company like Amazon does want to jump in, they're going to find this is a lot harder to spin up. And the right time to do this was years ago. And the second best time to do it is right now.
Beautiful, beautiful quote. And our commenters basically looking to Gandalf, like they're imagining Gandalf appearing at the top of the hill at the end of the Two Towers on the fifth day. And it's Valve. It's the Valve Deckard in that white horse to save the world of men. So yeah, people are hoping for Valve to appear out of nowhere, surprise everyone. And just for our commenters out there, we've put questions out to Meta to find out what their presence at GDC is actually going to be like. We haven't had a response to that. That could indicate they're just too busy to get back to us, or it could indicate they've got surprises in store.
I color me skeptical on Valve being able to complete.
No, not Valve, sorry, Meta.
Yeah, yeah, no, but I'm just saying in terms of the discussion before about Valve coming in, color me skeptical about Valve being able to compete on the global supply chain in the against Meta and Apple and Samsung. You know, a few years ago, there was a company that Valve was working with, Imagine Optics, to develop VR lenses that likely would have gone into Deckard, and Meta acquired them, for example. So you can see, Valve could have acquired them. Valve could have made a competing offer. They didn't. I don't think that Valve is going to be able to compete on the same scale, but that doesn't mean that they can't compete for a different niche. That's a completely different question.
Well, I do have the record somewhere on this show. There are audio clips of me suggesting unexpected partnerships in this next phase of personal computing, suggesting that we might see unexpected things between Valve or other parties. The thing, you know, like everything I'm seeing is indicating that all the competitors are looking to gear towards next year as their thing. And the way this has fallen, the way everything has settled, Apple Vision Pro appears to be a good hardware product with a brand new software platform that's going to take years to bake into completion and years to build out the development platform to compete with what Meta is doing. And then Meta is going to hit real hard with a really cheap device that does everything the Quest 3 did, with the exception of the lenses.
We're seeing partnerships form already. You know, there's Samsung, Google, Meta, LG, Meta, Microsoft. A lot of people don't talk about that partnership is already very much so secured. Some comments here. Artful saying Valve could join forces with Panasonic. Well, look what happened to Panasonic's VR subsidiary, Shiftel. Panasonic sold it off due to the issues of them getting their OLED micro display based headset out there. And Captain K pointing out very validly that Samsung bought Imagine, the American OLED micro display development company that was hyped as potentially being one of Valve's partners. So, you know, one of the partners gets bought up by Samsung, the other gets bought up by Meta. Some other people in the comments pointing out Steam Deck. And Valve's doing okay with Steam Deck, and Steam Deck a great product, and a very specific audience loves it. But as I've said on this show before, Steam Deck is not as big as some people seem to think. Valve has sold a couple of million Steam Decks, right? Meta has sold tens of millions of Quests, and Nintendo have sold north of a million Switches. These are at a different scale. The thing I want to always say when it comes to niche hardware is there will always be a place for niche hardware that serves enthusiasts. What we're talking about here on the grand scale of things is who are the companies that are going to sell tens of millions or hundreds of millions of these things, not a few million.
James saying, I still love my Index. That's absolutely a very valid comment to make here. It's one of the leading headsets on Steam. It is a workhorse machine for a lot of people. It stays plugged in and never gets unplugged from a lot of PCs. But there was a specific thing.
Hold on, Steam Deck.
Do you think Valve has sold more Steam Decks through Steam than Meta has sold Quests through Meta.com?
That's an interesting question. Probably a similar number, but it doesn't matter because Meta sells its headsets also on Amazon. It's an example of their scale ambition. We have a comment here saying from Monikazi and Captain K saying north of 100 million. I assume that was with Nintendo Switch. Either I misspoke or my voice wasn't carried because that's what I was intending to say, north of 100 million Switches. Valve has sold a couple of million Steam Decks. Meta has sold tens of millions of Quests. And Nintendo has sold north of 100 million Nintendo Switches.
Yeah, and Nintendo is targeting next year for its next system, by all accounts. That's what the reports are indicating.
Yeah.
And it just, to your point of what two potential partners there getting acquired by the big companies in the room, that has real effects on smaller companies' ability to deliver in the time frame they originally expected. So if you have to go back to the drawing board because you have to get new partners for a specific component, that is exactly what we heard that story happen to Valve in the past. That specifically, I think Gabe Newell or one of the other executives is on the record as just realizing how screwed they are when they lose the global supply of a single component. And right now we have the biggest companies in the world buying up supply. And I think what I'm getting at here is that is why they're getting into VR. They're not getting into VR because some executive has a vision for the future of their company. They're getting into VR because Meta is making a real market of this technology and they don't want to lose it.
And Apple is entering it. That's a very important, some companies started to get interested in this when Quest 2 proved it was a real market, right? Quest 2, as Meta says, and they are right about this based on the numbers, was the first mainstream VR headset. It sold more than pretty much every other VR headset in the past combined, when real headsets, not just phone holders. That got some companies interested. Some of the companies that are entering today, they started seeing that through only the success of Quest 2. Others joined as soon as Apple announced their headset. These are these two interesting markers. Now, there were companies who also joined in 2014 when Mark Zuckerberg acquired Oculus for around $3 billion in total. These marker events, as you say, they're an example of people who they're following a proven pattern. Very rarely do you actually see from the big companies, people who have the vision to actually go in before it's proven out. Now, lots of startups do, to be very crystal clear. There are startups who have seen the vision before Mark Zuckerberg, right? But when it comes to the big companies, what gives Meta its position that it was right now is that Mark Zuckerberg could see this coming in 2014, not 2024.
Yep, and that's what we're harping on here is you need I know that this is the way business gets done, but I don't know if your also ran solutions are worth the effort. I think you're going to just lose a lot of money and a lot of people if you don't come at this with some kind of a vision for how your company fits into this ecosystem. And I think it's really interesting, the console approach. I think we're going to have to get into Meta's console-like approach to this ecosystem, the benefits and the pitfalls of that approach. I'm not in a camp to say whether Meta's console approach was good or not, but I do think the argument can be made that it's successful and it is perhaps the right model to think about for VR, even though sideloading is an absolute necessity for a lot of people. It allows a lot of exploration. It's really, really crummy that so many people can't get distribution on the main Quest store. They can get fairly easy App Lab distribution, but we had a guest on our show last week, Plutosphere, who was denied basically a business because it seemed to be reserved for the platform holding companies that wanted to do this themselves. So you've got You've got benefits and drawbacks to all of these approaches. But I want to talk about Nintendo. I've become a little bit of obsessed with Nintendo over the last few days. And people, at the same time that they're calling out for Steam and Valve to show up unexpectedly, we have to give kudos to Nintendo for shipping the Labo cardboard boxes. As crummy as those games were, as bad as those experiences were, I had immense joy putting together those cardboard accessories with my kids, putting together these little things like robots and a VR headset that'll let you experience games in new ways. It is not unheard of. It's possible for Nintendo to come out and build a VR headset of its own. I noticed people talking about Tilt 5. I would love to see a team up between Tilt 5 and Nintendo. There are ways for companies to surprise us in this next gen, but I'm just so worried that they're going to do it on the wrong time scale.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Nintendo, their strengths are in game design, right? Their strength is not cutting edge hardware. And when it comes to something like VR and AR, you need to be a company that has strengths in cutting edge hardware. Where I think Nintendo could and should and maybe and probably will arrive in this industry is as a content partner. So a couple of years ago, you saw Nintendo partner with Apple to build iPhone games, right? Based on their existing IPs, Apple said to Nintendo, what would it look like if Nintendo built a smartphone game, a game designed for just a touchscreen? And you saw some Nintendo games arrive like that. That's how I think this could happen. Either Apple or Meta or Google goes to Nintendo and says, I want you to build some VR or mixed reality games for our hardware. And Nintendo releases them on a separate hardware. I think we're a long way away from Nintendo being able to release a meaningfully useful piece of hardware in this industry, though.
Yeah, so this is why I wanted to get into Nintendo. So I've got one of the things I would demonstrate in my office using the first person example. So I've got a Nintendo 2DS, bought it a decade ago, six or seven cartridges for it with Pokemon game, Super Smash Brothers, a couple others. I could take that 2DS out, this physical device in my hand, hold it right here on this headset, and then I could hold a virtual version of the same console over here. And so like I could have the physical object here of $120 device, or I can't remember what the 2DS was when it was new. But here's a device that plays the entire library of games for this console. But they stripped out the 3D functionality of this 2DS device in order to ship it at a lower price and get more of these handhelds out to everyone a decade ago. But here in my hand, over on my right, I've got the Citra VR thing installed, and it's actually showing me this content in 3D at better quality than the headset, than the device that Nintendo shipped a decade ago. Like the 3D should be bright and crisp in the same way that all the 3D content is bright and crisp and in focus. Whereas I remember going to E3 and seeing the 3DS on display really, really early on. And I remember screwing with the little 3D effect and just turning it right off because of how bad it is. That was my experience with the 3D effect. And Nintendo had to go through multiple generations of hardware to figure out how they're going to reach tens and tens of millions of devices for these great games on this system. And the Nintendo is so interesting because they take such grief for suing people off the internet who are profiting from the sale or piracy of their games. Now, to my knowledge, Nintendo doesn't seem to target people who just do it for preservation purposes or for themselves, but they do seem to target people that are profiting from the distribution of this content. Reason this matters is there are still games from 1996 that are getting re-released in new formats on these new devices. They're upgrading Pokemon Red for modern devices as a completely new game that works on modern devices, and they sell. They actually sell. They're good games when they get re-released. All this is to say that there's 30 years of content stuck within the Nintendo handheld ecosystem, that if a partner like Apple or Meta said, here, you keep everything, we take no money off the top of you selling games on our store, but go ahead, bring over the entire library to the App Store. The moment that happens, it would be a force change. Like if you could have all the game, what if you could put on a VR headset and have every gaming handheld you've ever owned in your entire life? Would you go get a VR headset then? I think you would. I think that would be a really, really major selling point.
I think it would be great, and I don't think you would find many people who would disagree with you. The question is, would Nintendo do it? And the answer is that Nintendo has been historically very slow to adopt new methods of game distribution and purchasing. They were slow on online. They were slow and reluctant. Like, even today, you can't do that on a Switch. Ask yourself, why can't you do everything you just said today on the Switch? Why can't I play GameCube games and DS games and et cetera, et cetera? You can play some of them, the specific ones that Nintendo has specifically ported. Why can't I play the whole library? Why can't I do what I can do on an emulator on a phone? Why can't I do that on a Switch? And the answer is because Nintendo doesn't want to. As J2 in our comments says, Nintendo tends to play it safe. So I just think there's a big difference between what would we love to happen and what would these companies really want to do. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't other partners that could be used here. I could very much so see Meta having a partnership with Sega, for example, or another one of those companies. You've seen companies like Sega have no problem with leveraging their existing IP to sell in new, interesting ways. I think on Oculus Arcade, on Gear VR, there even was a Sega partnership. I think you could play some of the Sega arcade games on a virtual arcade in Gear VR. An example, again, of we've said on this show of how Meta used to have a lot of useful and interesting first-party software back in the Oculus days that has basically vanished and disappeared over time, probably because they saw usage was low. Oh, therefore, feature must be bad. Forgetting, wait a minute, what if the hardware just isn't good enough for this yet? And in a few headsets time, it will be, but they never out because they kill the feature before they give it a chance.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you talk about Nintendo being slow to adopt things, and that's true, but it's also Japan is such a different technological sphere, right? Like the technology is launched there on a different timeline in a different way than they typically do the rest of the world. I think it's like I've enjoyed some really phenomenal functionality on Switch first, like getting the video files that you record off of a Switch to your phone is actually a really cool little distribution system where like you get a QR code and then your phone loops into the Wi-Fi network of the Switch and then you download the video from your Switch to your phone and then you can distribute it to multiple platforms. That was pretty neat when I did that a while back. But like that's a completely different sort of flow than you're used to in the West or in any other devices. But I just have to throw out that like that original Game Boy from the 1980s, right? We're talking 1989, had a link cable that you could plug in between two handheld game systems and trade Pokemon or play Tetris two-player. And I think about that model of handheld gaming living on in this decade or this century, right? Like, what was it? Street Pass was one of those features of Nintendo, and you had this like weird GPS-based, location-based sharing. I don't think it was GPS-based. It was just your devices see each other and you exchange data because they've seen each other. Really weird ideas on Nintendo's part. And I'm still seeing people using that Street Pass today. Like it's weird. Nintendo had ways of beaming games to each other from another device, of having multiplayer in various ways over the years. I would hate if it's just a matter of the two people need to buy the game, right? We're going to put out a video here very soon about the Dr. Beef VR ports. They're some of the most incredible experiences you can have in a standalone device from games that were made 20 years ago. And they've been ported by fans over to VR. And you technically could go and get the files for those games illegally. But in all of our reports, we recommend going and buying the game off of Steam because it's only $2 or $3. And then you can modify it to run in VR. If all that's required is we need to go and buy Pokemon Red for $10 again, and two people have to buy it instead of one. Two people have to go buy the original Pokemon Red for it to be exactly like the original cartridge. Like, this is a carbon copy, simulated version of that original cartridge. And then we could have a simulated version of the Game Boy, and you have a simulated version of the Game Boy, and we legitimately trade Pokemon such that your register loses the Pokemon and my register gains the Pokemon, and it works exactly like it did back in the day. That's my dream. I want gaming to function so that we're in the same room, but it works exactly like it did back on that original hardware.
I think a lot of people want this, but it's not a technical limit. There's no reason that Nintendo couldn't do this on smartphones today. There's no reason that Nintendo couldn't do everything you just described on an iPhone app that everyone can use. They don't want to do it.
Why don't they want to do it? It's the 30% is what I'm getting at. There has to be a new way to model out pricing and the sharing of the platform of, like, you don't,
I don't think it is the 30%. I don't think they want it. Even if they could get 100%, I just don't think they want to do it. I don't think that's the kind of business they want. And that could be just, it's just their corporate culture that they're not into that. They want you to go buy a Switch and play their latest games.
I get it. I totally get it. And I know that that's the history there. I just, the timing of everything, like, the, as I, if I look back at it historically, I think Nintendo made that agreement for all of those games because they needed the cash infusion to stand up the Switch business and get it through to the next phase. I could be wrong on that, and maybe it's just completely off analysis, but what you're saying is right. But what I guess I'm counteracting it with is we've got two companies that are willing to put many billions on the line in order to get that content working on your system.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether Meta or Apple make that partnership. Do we want to wrap up here? I think we've got past 2 hours now.
Oh, yeah. We've got the zero up on our board because we've talked too long. We've had fantastic comments this entire time. We thank you so much for tuning into us. Thank you for joining us on this journey into the future of personal computing. It's getting more and more intense, I think, week after week, to summarize this stuff for David and I, because it's like we've been telling you it's coming for years, but with each new news story, we're being proven right a little bit more and a little bit more that this is as serious as we expected it to be, and you all are on this journey with us. So if you see any news out there we should know about or we should be covering, please email tips@uploadvr.com. Thank you to Lano for becoming a new member. Let's see, Lano's comment here, since I became a member, let's call it out here before we close out. I've heard that the Japanese business culture is pretty risk averse, so they'll stick to what they know works for as long as possible. At least that's what I've read. Yeah, it does seem, I think, in line with culture. I believe Nintendo has had very long time employees, so it would be very unlike them to step out of what they know and what they do. And for decades to come, I want a Nintendo handheld because they've provided me so much fun, but I also want that content in VR. So there's our challenge to Nintendo, Meta, and everyone else. We want more games. We want them in every format in VR, and we want them yesterday. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you next week. See you in the future.
Thanks so much, everyone. Thanks again. We very much so hope to see you next week again to continue to discuss this industry. Thanks again for all the comments and discussion. And if you have any thoughts that come to you after the show, or if you're someone watching after the show that didn't catch it live, please leave your comments below. We do endeavor to read all of them. Thanks so much, everyone.